Veteran Podcast. Thank you for your service.
All right, everybody, welcome back to Bulletproof Veteran Podcast, and Happy New Year. We're starting 2023 off just the way we should, and I'm really excited because we ended 2022 talking a lot about transitioning out of the military. We had some organizations on that we talked about, you know, how to match those skills from the military to civilian world, how to write up, you know, is a resume the way to go? Is it, you know, getting your foot in the door and actually explaining to an employer what you do? I know we had organizations on that help kind of take those skills and translate them into something that a civilian employer can really understand, because let's be honest, most military jobs don't translate just boom, hey, I did this in the military and now, you know, I can do this for you. So we want to highlight those things. But one of the things that we talked about was really wanting to get to the military member as early as possible. Really, we talked about going all the way back to basic training. Reality is we'd like to get you a year out, 6 months out before you're getting out of the military, because that crucial time when you transition out is about a year, 6 months to a year out. If things start really collapsing, you have an increased risk for issues, spousal issues, suicide, all the things that we talk about. So we want to hit you as early as possible. And that's what we're going to talk a little bit about today. All right. Today we have James Hodgman. He is an Air Force veteran. All right. He was security forces. So we're probably going to beat him up a little bit later, but that we'll leave that to the side. But he's a fellow Air Force veteran, which I love to have on the show. And right now he's out in California doing a internship with the DoD SkillBridge program. And you may or may not be familiar with that. This is something that came after I was already out of the military, so I'm still learning myself. But we're going to get into all this fun stuff, and we're going to talk about setting ourselves up for success when we leave the military. And that includes making sure that we're looking after each other, suicide prevention, keeping that mission going, and really just being the best people we can be when we get out. And that's what, let's be honest, that's what Bulletproof Veteran is all about. So James, thank you so much for coming on the show.
Thanks for allowing me to be on here. I greatly appreciate it.
All right. So the way we usually start off is we kind of hand it off to you to tell us a little bit about yourself, your military service, where you came from, all that kind of fun stuff, and what got you here and on our show. So please tell us a little bit.
Sure thing. I was born in Fitchburg, Massachusetts, and I grew up in a small town in Troy, New Hampshire. After high school, I enlisted in the Air Force, as you mentioned, in security forces originally. I did that for about 6 years. As a security forces member, I worked as an entry controller, patrolman, armor, desk sergeant in the United States, in Europe with one deployment. In 2009, I retrained into the public affairs career field to become a photojournalist, and I've been doing that ever since, right up until I got approved for the SkillBridge program with Solano County. As a photojournalist, I got the opportunity to travel the world and document the Air Force and Space Force mission, from air mobility to space launch to what we're doing with downrange operations all over the world. And it was a really cool job. As of right now, I have an approved Air Force retirement date of March 1st, 2023. So as I'm looking forward to that, I'm currently on an internship with the DoD SkillBridge program at the Solano County Public Health Office in California. I'm looking forward to what that next career is going to look like, that next chapter in life. And I'm really thankful for the opportunity.
Very cool. So we're actually grabbing you at like the perfect time, because listen, I transitioned out of the military in 2005. I'm the better part of 20 years out of the military. So I can speak on what it was like to get out 20 years ago, you know, and I can tell people about the things I did wrong, the things I wish would have been available to me. But it's so much better to grab somebody that's actually going through it right now. Like, we had TAPS. Okay. You had a checklist that command gave you that, you had to out process and you had to get your initials. And that's exactly what it was. And I've talked to countless people. You basically were just trying to get that initial. You weren't paying attention. Right. You weren't taking advantage of anything. You were like, I want to get the hell out of here, sign my paperwork so I can go back and give this to, you know, whoever it is, the orderly room or whatever it is, so that I can continue on and be out the date that I need to be out. Especially if you are transitioning while you're overseas or something like that, because you're just trying to, you got a lot of things to do. You know, you've got a car to get rid of, you got, you know, electric bills to pay, or they won't let you leave the country, all sorts of crap. How has your transition kind of been going? Now, you're 3 months till it's all kind of kaput. And, you know, do you feel like the military has kind of set you up for success? I know you've been away a little bit doing the internship, but you're still, you know, having to out-process at the same time. So how has that kind of gone?
Well, as far as the out-processing aspect of it, I think that went pretty well for the most part.
Okay.
I think the military offers, especially in the Air Force offers a lot of opportunities for service members, for airmen to hopefully transition successfully.
Mm-hmm.
However, as I say that, there's a lot of responsibility on the individual. The member has to be able to take advantage of those opportunities, whether it's education, it's certifications, it's courses, or just getting the information that they need so they can make educated decisions. So maybe you want to apply for SkillBridge, or maybe you want to go a different route, or because there's a lot of programs that are out there, but a lot of people just might not know what is out there. Like you mentioned, the Transition Assistance Program, you know, as of today, that's always required. It's a DOD requirement before anybody transitions out of the military. But I encourage people to take that class early on, like up to 12 months before they transition out. And then you can even take it again to kind of refresh yourself, because there's a lot of information that is thrown at you in that class. And I'm not sure if LinkedIn was a big topic when you went through the class.
No, but definitely not.
You know, it was definitely mentioned. It was covered in our course. Networking, resume writing, your elevator pitch, so to speak, mm-hmm. You know, just to kind of get your foot in the door, right? Landing that interview and how that goes. I'm kind of in the in-between time between my internship. I'm trying to network every day, and I'm applying for jobs like clockwork on my LinkedIn and Indeed and everywhere else. I've applied for like 43 different jobs, and I've heard a couple of no's,
mm-hmm.
And I'm hoping to hear a few yeses, and I can get in to a quality career going forward. But long answer to your question, I think the military does a fairly good job when it comes to providing the opportunity to the service members to have, so they can have everything they need when they transition out. It's just a matter of being able to take advantage of those opportunities.
Yeah, there's a lot of personal responsibility, and good, bad, or indifferent, a lot of us didn't take advantage or show the initiative because we're dumb kids and thought we knew everything, especially if you got out when you were 23, 24, you know, you think, you have the world by the balls, and you don't have to. You know, you come up with an idea in your head and you just think, well, that's never going to fail. That's my idea and that's what's going to happen. And then when you actually get out, it all kind of crumbles and falls apart. And that's when you get yourself into some trouble. you know, I had in my head that I was going to school to be an English teacher. I got out, I applied, I started going to college, and it quickly crumbled because I wasn't taking advantage of all my educational benefits because I didn't do it right. And I was living on Long Island trying to pay for an apartment because I was too dumb to just stay at home with mom and dad, which, folks, there's nothing wrong with living at home with mom and dad if they offer. because I went out and got an apartment and it was $900 a month or whatever it was. And I couldn't go to school, work part time and pay for that. I had to get a full time job, and then school became part time, and then school became nothing. Very quick cascade. And now I went and corrected all of that, but there were a lot of hard times that probably didn't need to exist. You talk quickly about like certifications and things like that before you get out of the military. So I was a vehicle mechanic. And one of the things that they harped on us was getting our civilian certifications along the way when we would – you could test for these different things, ASC certifications, everything from front-end alignment, inspections, you could do air conditioning, all these different things. But again, the responsibility is on you because the military doesn't care if you have that or not. You don't need it to be, you know, to move up to staff sergeant, tech sergeant, whatever the case may be. But a lot of guys didn't take advantage of it. They would even pay for it. You didn't have to pay. But, you know, you had to study and you had to go to the class and take it and all this. No, I'm not going to do that. I'd rather go to the bar on Friday and not worry about it. So that is very important. And it, again, the responsibility is on the individual to take advantage of those things, because I have friends that tried to be mechanics when they got out. And they got out with no certifications, and they would go to try to get a job, and they'd be like, all right, what are you certified in? Oh, nothing. Oh, crap. What kind of tools do you have? Oh, I have nothing. Because the military gave me all my tools. I didn't start buying any tools. Oh, well, that's going to be a problem. You're going to owe the Snap-on guy about $30,000 in, you know, 6 months. So is there anything that the military is trying to do to kind of change the mindset of a younger man or woman to get them to take advantage of some of these? Like you said there's a lot out there, but we're not taking advantage of it. Is there anything that they're trying to do to get people to do it? I know that's a hard thing.
Well, it is, because we both know in the military, the missions comes first, mm-hmm. and it always comes first. But I always led by my mantra was always, take care of your people first, and then the mission will follow.
Right.
Because the people take care of the mission. And so I was always harping on the importance of education to my airmen, and I tried to use myself as an example. So I started pursuing my Community College of the Air Force degree in criminal justice when I was in security forces, you know, working 14-hour days and pretty crazy mission set. I was also trying to pursue my bachelor degree at the same time. I was trying to pursue a bachelor degree in mass communication. And it took a long time to get to that finish line. I came into the Air Force in 2002. I didn't get that bachelor degree and my CCAF, the Community College of the Air Force degrees, which are associates in applied science degrees, until 2012. So it took a decade mm-hmm. to get that done. But I was able to knock those out. And then that set me up to pursue my master's in management, which I earned in February of 2022 through American Military University.
Mm-hmm.
And so the Air Force, I can't speak on every branch of the service, but the Air Force does a pretty good job of stressing the importance of education. You want well-rounded airmen to make quality decisions, right? They're going to have ideas, innovation, more efficient operations, whatever the case may be. And that just makes for not just a better mission, but a better airman coming to do that mission every day. And so there's several programs in place. I've always encouraged my airmen to use tuition assistance. That's how I got through all my education. I wound up, I transferred everything in my GI Bill to my wife so she could get her master's degree as a social worker. And but I've always harped on this stressed tuition assistance, because it's free. It's there every year. I believe it's $4,500 TA every year. And so maximize that money and use it to your benefit. Take classes, whether it's for your associate's degree, your CCAF degree, your bachelor's or master's. The Air Force tuition assistance will cover all the way through a master's degree.
Yep.
And so I stress that, and I use myself as an example because that's how I funded my education. And on the certification front, I did the same thing. Through Air Force COOL, it's a program that will fund certifications, up to two certifications, one certification in your field and one certification outside your field. And as long as you have money in that pot, which is a $4,500 pot of money, you can apply for those certifications. They'll pay for the training courses that you need and for the exam that you need to take, all of those things. And I applied through Air Force School, and I was able to obtain a management certification. So I'm a certified manager, and the Air Force School program was able to help me get there. And I'm currently pursuing an accreditation in public relations, which is a professional certification in the public relations realm that's really well looked upon. It's really well valued in that area. And I take that test on February 14th, right? And that's all through Air Force School. And I've always stressed to my airmen to get that done. And I had an airman at Travis Air Force Base get her bachelor's degree. And I have an airman at Patrick Space Force Base, Florida, and he's pursuing a business administration degree right now. And I've always harped on them, you know, send me the TA request. Get after it sooner rather than later. Mm-hmm. Because, you know, if you're waiting for the right time, if you keep pushing that down the road, you're never going to start. And it's just going to get more difficult. Life's going to happen. You're going to go TDY. Mission's never going to like slow down. There's always an intense operations tempo. Oh, pack your bags. You got a deployment. So I've always encouraged everybody that I supervise to start early. You know, take those classes, you know, read books on the professional reading list, you know, always be with that growth mindset, looking for those opportunities, and figure out pretty early on where it is you want to go. Like, what do you want to do? Are you thinking I'm going to do 4 years and done? That's my plan. And if that's the case, here's what I recommend you do, man. You know, you gotta get after your education, look at these certifications, right? Maximize those benefits. Because that's going to set you up for success. Now, if you're doing 20 or longer, you're going to be in longer. But hey, you know, don't wait till 20 years to knock out those certifications. As you're going through, plug along the way, because there's opportunities out there for you.
And if you're going 20, you're going to want to get into those E7, E8, E9 positions. And if you don't have education, if you don't check the boxes for special duties and certifications and all that kind of stuff, good luck in front of the boards. It's probably not going to happen. You know, you're gonna have to do time as either a recruiter or a first sergeant or, you know, TI, you know, down at Lackland, something. You know, you're going to have to do something. And all of that takes time. Away from, say, just going for the regular bachelor's. Because if you're a first sergeant, you're going to be a busy human being.
Yes.
You know, if you're down at Lackland, learn to be a drill instructor, a TI, you know, depending on the branch of service, you're going to be a busy human being. It's going to be tough to take that time and go to, you know, community college classes or university classes, even though a lot's offered online now. Still, it's a big ask. And so getting that done early on in your career is very important. Not waiting until the last minute, like some of us did. But what I really hear you saying is that the onus is on the individual. But I think the way we change the mindset of the individual is the leadership. People like yourself who are actually saying, go do this, and harping it. Remember, you're talking to 18 and 19-year-olds. You're not talking to 40-year-olds. The brain works differently. Let's be honest. These are kids. They're basically kids. They're probably the first time they've been out on their own. It's for the first time they've had any real responsibility, probably. So it's really on the NCOs that have been through it already to kind of look them in the eyes and say, guys, do this. And then probably a month later, did you do it? Well, go do it. I'm ready to sign the TA request, you know,
right.
And you're harping on them. And I know it's tedious for the NCOs, and I know you probably want to beat your head up against a wall sometimes when they don't listen, but that's the responsibility of leadership. I mean, that's what a leader does. It you know, you beat your own head up against a wall to benefit somebody else. So I think that's very important, and that's exactly what it sounds like that you're kind of saying as well.
Yeah, exactly. You hit the nail right on the head. I had an airman at Patrick Space Force Base, which was where I had my last opportunity to supervise airmen. And I had three amazing airmen. And they're going to do great things, whether they stay in the military or they get out. But I had one of them tell me that, you know, he wanted to pursue an education. He wanted to get his business administration bachelor's degree. And he'd completed his career development courses. He was in a great place to start his education. but he hadn't sent me a request for tuition assistance.
Mm-hmm.
And the way the Air Force works now is your supervisor has to be a part of that approval chain.
Okay.
To click that button. And so every time I saw him, I was like, have you decided where you wanted to go yet? Are you picked a school? Are you picked a program? Have you been to the education office? Have you taken advantage of their counseling? Let's get that appointment squared away. I was always harping on him about it. And then one day he said, yeah, I'm going to pursue business administration. It's with American Military University. And he sent me his tuition assistance request. I approved it right away. But I've always harped on the education aspect of this. Because a lot of folks, you know, 4 years, 6 years goes by so fast. 20-year career goes by incredibly fast. And if you don't take advantage of those opportunities when you have them, you could find yourself on the outside looking in. And education is just one aspect of it. The Air Force, the military gives people skills. They give us a lot of knowledge, a lot of discipline. But you know, you arm that with the education and the certifications. Now you have the skills, the knowledge, and the background to go in after your military career and really get after that next job and have some success.
Yeah. So speaking of that success and getting after that next job, we kind of segue into the SkillBridge program, which again, you can take advantage of. You can start applying, I think you said about a year out of your transition, and you can start the program about 6 months. So again, something you want to do ahead of time. You don't want to wait till, you know, you're getting out 3 weeks later and say, oh, I want to take advantage of this. It's not going to happen. But you're doing an internship right now out in California with the DOD for the SkillBridge program. So take us through that a little bit, especially for myself. Like I said, I don't know much about it, but I know the goal is to make the transition good, get you into a career, and kind of match you up with that employer. So please take me through it a little bit.
Sure thing. So the Department of Defense SkillBridge program, it's been around for several years. It's gone through some changes recently. But the intent is, just like you said, to give transitioning service members an opportunity to go from the military service and into the civilian workforce much easier, to kind of simplify that process and hopefully link them up with a job opportunity after they complete their internship.
Mm-hmm.
And apply those skills that they've taken from the military and the civilian world and hopefully have some success, because it is a little bit different. You know, terminology is different. Daily operations are different in many capacities. So that can be kind of a shell shock to a lot of service members who are going from, that transition, sometimes in a relatively short window, only a couple of months. But you can do the SkillBridge program anywhere between 180 days to like 90 days,
mm-hmm.
Depending on what you get approved for. But that's the whole intent of the program, to better prepare transitioning service members for success. And so, as you said, you can apply for it up to 12 months out. You can be approved up to that far out. And that's what I did. I put in for it 12 months out, and I was approved for it for about 140-ish or so days to work in the public information team in the Solano County Public Health Office. And I'm using my public affairs, my photojournalist and social media background for doing that 14 years with the Air Force. I'm doing that now on the civilian side with Solano County. And I'm hoping that transitions, that leads to a nice job opportunity down the road here in about a month or so.
Excellent. So now the goal of the program really is to place you in some type of an internship. Is that generally the path that it takes, where you're going to go out and work? I won't say you step back from your military service, but you almost take a leave of your military service to go do the internship for that whatever given period of time, like you said, 3, 4 months, 5 months, whatever it ends up being. And you step into kind of the civilian world at that point.
Yeah, it's a really unique opportunity, and I don't think a lot of folks really know enough about it, so I'm glad you're asking me about it today.
Hmm.
It can be approved. So the SkillBridge program offers transitioning service members up to 6 months before they separate or retire from the military an opportunity to complete an internship or an apprenticeship. So maybe if an internship isn't what you want to go for, maybe like you said, you were a mechanic, mm-hmm. and you want to do more of an apprenticeship and do welding or do whatever the case may be, you have that opportunity. And so what you have to do is you go on to the DoD SkillBridge page, and you have to search through the approved, authorized companies or organizations who are approved to provide DoD SkillBridge internships and apprenticeships, and the locations. Because for the most part, service members have to do a SkillBridge internship or apprenticeship within 50 miles of their last duty assignment.
Okay.
You have to be approved by your commander to do SkillBridge outside of that 50-mile radius. Now, of course, my last base is Patrick Space Force Base, Florida, and I'm doing my SkillBridge in California. That's like 3,000 miles away, right?
A little more than 50. A little more than 50.
So we added a few miles on that 50-mile radius. But that is an example of, you know, the program is designed to work for the service member. And so, like I said, you get up to 6 months. It doesn't mean you're going to get 180 days to do the SkillBridge program. They factor in if you have to maybe move out ahead of the start of your SkillBridge, you can get permissive TDY on top of that. I think it's like 20 days or so mm-hmm. to help you transition, get settled in, which might be really beneficial for folks that say if they're coming from overseas or if they have to secure housing or whatever the case may be, ship a car or that kind of stuff, right? So you have about 20 days on the front you can take for that. Then you have however long your SkillBridge program is for, and then you take your terminal leave. You can set it all up like that so you don't go back to your base. You just ride off into the sunset into your next career. And while you're on the SkillBridge program, you're still on active duty.
Right.
You're still getting paid. You're still paying your BAH, right? You still got to toe that line with those customs and courtesies, right? I can't be doing crazy stuff. Go out there bouncing checks. All right. Those kind of things. But they're also approving you for SkillBridge because you understand all of those things. And you're going to be a positive representation of the military, the DOD, the service that you're representing. Because there's still all those requirements within the program you have to adhere to. But it's a great opportunity, like I said before, to give folks that chance to work in the civilian arena, because it is very different. And it can help folks kind of transition. It can help folks kind of figure out, get some insight onto what that world is like, and hopefully be more successful because of it.
Yeah. Now, because we're all in the, you know, we were all in the military, most of the listeners here are veterans or know somebody that was in the military, we're also skeptics. We always look at things that the government is going to give us, and we kind of look at the other hand and say, well, what are you going to take from me if you give me this? Because it sounds like this is a, you know, it's a great program. It gives you a great opportunity. Is there any ask back from, say, the Air Force when you go into this program? Is there anything that you have to, you know, give up or return to them? Is there any, you know, is there a feedback from the employer that you have to make sure you're on good standing, that type of stuff? Or is this basically just like, hey, we applied, your command said yes, the DoD SkillBridge program said yes, and I'm good to go?
For the most part, it's exactly what you just said.
Okay.
Now, in the black and white, in the fine print, so to speak, there's always that line that stipulates if a need arises, the command can call you back.
Of course.
And terminate your SkillBridge program for a variety of reasons, right? Mm-hmm. If they needed James at the base to fill sandbags tomorrow or whatever, maybe it was getting that bad, I'd be out there filling sandbags or whatever the case may be, right? That's always in there. And as a military service member, we understand that we get that.
Right.
However, the consensus is more so that this is somebody who is, how do I say this? This is somebody who is leaving the military. Mm-hmm. They're moving on with their life. We want to prepare them for success. And so the consensus is 9 times out of 10, usually, that they're pretty much left alone. I'm not bothered by my command back at Patrick Space Force Base. I still have contact with my supervisor. We touch base periodically. And while you're in the SkillBridge program, you still have to make contact with your local education center because they are that liaison. They
okay.
liaise between the member who's in the program all the way back up to the headquarters DOD folks on the SkillBridge stuff. So you still have to maintain that contact. But there's by no means, they're not harassing. They're not expecting you to report in for PT or anything like that. You know, they're not harassing you at all. Mm. And, you know, as far as like freedoms, then what do you got to do? Like, look at this.
I was going to say.
I'm enjoying that.
Yeah, listen, having a beard back is always a good thing. But at the same time, don't take it too far. Don't be running down to the recreational marijuana place and you know, getting, you know, a little something for the next concert because you still are an active duty military member, you know, so. But the program is also for Guard and Reserve in some cases as well, correct? I mean, I know it's not the same. I think the application process is a little different, but I think there was on the website, I saw something that you don't have to be active duty, but it's more geared towards active duty.
Yeah. Anybody who's a uniformed service member can take advantage of it. Mm-hmm. Obviously there's differences when you're guard or reserve. I would encourage folks to go check out the DOD SkillBridge site to get the particulars and figure out how it's going to apply to their own specific situation.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, it's a great opportunity.
No, it's awesome. And especially for somebody in you know, different career fields where it really does help to have that internship, something like PR, it's a weird world nowadays. I mean, I know in the military, the PR departments are very small, you know, maybe just a couple people. I know when I was at Andrews, it was a little larger because it was Andrews, but they worked with Bowling as well. So there was kind of like one office between the two Air Force bases. But it was, you know, it was a little bit of a bigger department because Air Force One and, you know, all the stuff that was going on with that. But most of the bases, they're small. So it gets... there's a lot of benefit for going out into the civilian world and getting that experience and networking because it's a small career field in the military. So you're not, you know, you might not get the same benefit as somebody like a mechanic. I could throw a rock on Facebook and find another military mechanic that could help me.
Right.
So it's definitely, you know, depending on what your career field is, this is something you might want to look at to get you out and transitioning. Now, another thing that really interests me in what you've been doing in your military career is the Safe Talk program. Now, I know you taught it at Patrick. You were one of the first people to teach this program at Patrick Space Force Base in there in Florida. Something that did not exist when I was in. You know, we talk a lot about veteran suicide and military suicide on this show and prevention. We work with a lot of different organizations that everything from equine therapy to ayahuasca to cannabis to, I mean, I've had people on the show that just something as simple as doing polar plunges and running and all this other stuff to get community together and help out our veterans and our military members. We didn't have things like the Safe Talk. That didn't exist. I think the closest that we had to this was to prevent in Italy to prevent DUIs because we were like number one in USAFE at the time. And you don't want to be number one in that. That's a bad number one. But we had the wingman program. But that ended up just being if your wingman got a DUI, you got in trouble as well. So not the greatest program. It was kind of like, you know, if you don't take care of the guy next to you, we're going to fry you as well. A little touch and go for most people. But tell me a little bit about Safe Talk, what it's about, how it works to prevent suicide, and really how it just makes sure that you're taking care of your wingman or your battle buddy or whatever other, you know, word that they want to use for, you know, somebody that's a friend in the military.
Okay, so Safe Talk stands for Safe Talk stands for Suicide Alertness for Everyone. Tell, ask, listen, keep safe.
Okay.
Now, we both know that in the military, in society in general, suicide is way too high.
Yeah.
We understand one suicide is one too many.
Of course.
And it affects all demographics, all age groups, all folks, all walks of life. In the military, it's way too high. And I'm very passionate about this because it just hits me to my core to know that somebody right now is struggling and we might not know about it.
Mm-hmm.
We might not know what they're going through, how to talk to them, how we can reach them to prevent them from considering suicide or attempting suicide. And unfortunately, many service members, and if you look at the statistics, too many veterans are in this position. As I'm speaking today, somebody is struggling.
Yes.
And with SafeTalk teaches people how to, it provides them in-depth skills to recognize the signs of suicide, how to properly engage with someone and ensure a connection to safety. And a lot of people, when they're confronted with a situation where somebody might be experiencing thoughts of suicide or suicidal ideations or just might be having a difficult time and just reaching out for support, they are reluctant to get involved because they just don't know how to have that conversation. What do I say? I don't want to make it worse. Like, what do I do in this situation? And unfortunately, a lot of suicide prevention training, while it was well intended in the Air Force and, you know, across the DOD, they've had different iterations of suicide prevention training, but it hasn't always gone as in depth as it should have.
Okay.
To give people these skills so they can effectively get people to a resource that can help them see that there's brighter days ahead of them. That this does not have to be their end, whatever struggle that they're going through. And SafeTalk provides those skills. It literally teaches people how to get involved, how to have those tough conversations, and how to facilitate that process to get somebody to a helpful resource so they can be here tomorrow. They can see a way through.
So what does this program kind of look like? Is this like an e-learning thing? Is this something that's a mandatory training for everybody, or is this something you volunteer for? You know, I know they did this at Hill. I was looking a little bit into it, and I think at Hill it was a voluntary program, and I think you went for 2 in-person classes. I don't know how it was at Patrick. So what does that kind of look like, and what's kind of the commitment by the airmen?
So I became certified as a LivingWorks SafeTalk instructor while I was stationed at Travis Air Force Base in California.
Okay.
I was at that base for almost 7 years. And in November 2020, I believe, they brought out LivingWorks trainers to get several airmen certified in SafeTalk to help draw down potential suicides across the Air Force, right? Travis Air Force Base is Air Mobility Command's largest installation, so it was a good place to implement that program. And we had to do, I think it was a 4-day workshop. You had to do 2 days on the SafeTalk program, followed by the ASSIST program, which is more in-depth and teaches you how to connect people on an emotional level and give them the support that they need. Because while you're teaching SafeTalk, you could have somebody experiencing some difficulties, having some struggles in those moments. And so that 4-day workshop gave us the skills to connect with those folks in a safe way. But I became certified at Travis Air Force Base in November 2020. And the class itself is 3 hours long. It's about three and a half hours long. And it's all in person. You can't do this online. And there's a reason for that. You can't do this online because you have to have that in-person connection. If I have somebody in the class who's moved or, you know, they become emotional or something, I don't want that to happen online and then that person not get the support that they need.
Mm-hmm.
Right. So that's why it's only in person. And like I said, it's a 3-hour class. There's slide decks you have to go through. There's videos and there's important points that they get across. But in that lesson, it covers all those skills, how to realize that people are reaching out. In SafeTalk, they call it inviting. extending an invitation to recognize that, you know, they're going through a difficult situation. They may need some support. Mm-hmm. Then it covers how to ask those questions and what not to say and how to do that. And then how you can safely link them to a helpful resource, whether that be the chaplain, a medical professional, a counselor, first sergeant, supervisor, whatever the case may be, to get that person the support they need.
Yeah, because I have to imagine that it's a difficult place to be in the military and be going through those, you know, thoughts or things. There's no safe place for you to turn in your mind in a lot of ways. Like, you know, we dealt with it with injuries or, you know, drinking or any of that type of stuff. You don't want to self-identify because then your military career could be affected. Or at least that's the mindset that we get ourselves in. I don't want to tell you that my knee is hurting because you might make me non-deployable. I might have a problem. I don't want to tell you that maybe my drinking's getting a little out of control, because if I tell you that, or if I tell, you know, during my my medical exam, if I tell you I'm drinking 5 days a week, you're going to put me in a program, you're going to make me non-deployable, it's going to adversely affect my military career. So we kind of hold all of these different things inside and we don't talk about them. Suicide or suicidal thoughts or anything from a mental standpoint has to be even worse in that regard, because you don't know who to go to. You don't know where a place of, hey, I can tell you what I'm going through without worrying about, well, what's going to happen to me tomorrow. So I think it's really important that these individuals that are trained can be there and can be that kind of safe place. Okay, can you help me? Can I talk to you? Because like you said, usually there is some type of invitation, even if we miss it. These people generally want help, you know, but the signs – you know, we miss them a lot of times, we misinterpret them. Maybe is a better way to say it. Right. You know, we think, oh, they're fine. They're telling me they're okay. They're still going through something, but they want to be left alone. Meanwhile, that's the exact opposite of what they want or what they need. How is the military joining something like Safe Talk with creating that safe place for a member to come, an active duty member to come and talk without feeling like, hey, if I talk to this person, they refer me to the chaplain or they refer me to a medical professional, I'm all of a sudden going to get put on some kind of profile. I'm going to have a problem, you know, all this stuff. So I'm not going to talk to anybody. I'm going to shield it. I'm not going to talk to anybody. Even though this is available, even though it's out there, I don't want to take advantage of it because something bad might happen to me. And that'll only make everything worse. Are they getting a little bit better with that? At least in your opinion?
Well, I can't speak for every branch.
No, of course, yeah.
But for the Air Force, in my experience, they've gotten better over time. And they've done a good job of trying to remove that idea that if I seek help because I'm going through something, that it's going to negatively affect my career. As you said, I'm concerned. I can't do the job I want to do anymore. Those kinds of things. Because what good are you to the mission? What good are you to yourself, your family, if you're struggling like that? And, you know, if you're thinking, if you're just in a bad place and you're, whether it's financial struggles, relationship, you know, a demotion at the office or whatever you're dealing with, what good are you going to be as a human being and to the mission if you're struggling like that? Probably not that good.
Of course.
So it benefits the military in so many ways to take care of their people. And the Air Force recognized this. And at Travis, they brought in the Safe Talk program. And I'm so thankful that they did, because I was able to hold one class in September of 2021 at Patrick Space Force Base. And we had 20 sexual assault victim advocates in that class. And if you think of people who see people at some of the worst times in their lives, mm-hmm. it is these amazing individuals who serve as sexual assault victim advocates. I can't even imagine the level of trauma that they have to try to counsel people through.
Oh, yeah, I can't even imagine it.
And that my classroom was full. I had 20 victim advocates there, and they were there to better understand how they can recognize the potential for suicide and how they can better assist folks who've experienced this trauma, who more times than not were service members themselves. So we had people who were trying to seek better ways to provide that much more support to people who needed it and people who are likely going to need it for a long time. And that was awesome to be able to see. And I'm so thankful for the leadership at Patrick for giving me that opportunity, and thankful for the folks at Travis Air Force Base for recognizing the need for safe talk and getting everybody trained up.
And again, I think it you said it earlier in the conversation when we were talking about transitioning and all of that, and I think it stands true with the Safe Talk program and suicide prevention. There's a lot that can be done if command and the NCOs make it their priority. If you are making your people your priority, if you're saying that a functional person is the best thing for the mission, and it's somebody going through something, we need to fix that to make sure that we're successful at the mission. If you take that mindset as an NCO or as a junior officer or even, you know, at the squadron or group level or wing level even, if you take that, we're going to beat this problem that we're having in the active duty realm, in veterans, you know, getting out. We're going to win. But you have to make that the priority. If it goes to the wayside and we say, well, we got a deployment coming up, I don't want to hear about the freaking problem you're having with your wife and your belly aching and all that bullshit. I don't want to hear it. Well, now we've right there, the chain broke. You lost somebody right there because now they know they're not the priority. Now they're not going to seek help because they think something bad's going to happen.
Right, exactly. We have to value human life. We have to value the person, the service member who is entrusted to us and who we are entrusted to lead and who we hope one day will replace us and then continue leading. Throughout my career, I've had the opportunity to supervise and mentor so many different airmen, and thankfully in two different career fields, in security forces and public affairs. I've had airmen who've battled I've had airmen who've had PTSD, some of them who turned to alcohol. And I even had an airman when I was at Vandenberg Air Force Base. He had a lot of things going on in his world. He was dealing with a lot of different traumatic things. And he actually got hit with discipline and was demoted. He lost his line number to promote to staff sergeant, and a lot of different things this guy went through. But he's a remarkable person. He was an outstanding security forces airman. He just had some issues that he was struggling with, and he was turning to alcohol to kind of cover up those things, to kind of get through those things. Mm-hmm. And I fought like crazy to get through to him and get him to some help and to some resources. And I ran into him years later when I was at Ramstein Air Base, and he was a staff sergeant.
That's awesome.
I was beyond happy and excited to see that, because, you know, that's a story that could have gone a whole nother way. You know, he could have been somebody who made that decision and considered suicide or something along those lines. Mm-hmm. And I'm so thankful that, you know, through the hard work, the attention, and the work that he put in.
Oh, yeah.
That he was able to find a positive way through what he was going through, and he's a better person for today. He's still with us and no doubt doing great things for our military as well.
Yeah. And you know what? It's nice to be selfish every once in a while, but that's got to be, like you said, it's a great feeling to know that what you did worked. Because you don't always get to see the end result, especially in the military, because you mentor somebody, you help somebody, they go to another base, you never see them again. You know what I mean? Maybe you keep in touch. You know, it's a little easier to keep in touch these days, but still, people get on with their lives, you never hear from them again. It's the way it works. Yeah. But when you get that reinforcement by meeting up with that person down the road and you see that, hey, they righted the ship and they're doing great things, you got to feel good about yourself. I mean, listen, there's nothing wrong with feeling good about yourself.
Yeah, I agree with that statement 100%. There's nothing more, I think, value added. There's nothing more amazing as a supervisor than seeing your people succeed.
Yep.
When they get an award, when they get a promotion, they're getting kudos from the commander. Or in this case, where you see somebody who had to go through some really tough, difficult times, and you see them come out the other side of the tunnel and they're better for it and they're shining and they're just doing so well. That to me is the highlight. That is amazing. I get excited about that.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. And you should. You definitely should. Well, we covered a lot of stuff. Now, I want to give you one last opportunity to, you know, any closing remarks that you have, and then I have a question for you. So first, again, I want to thank you for coming on the show. It's been very enlightening. Again, for somebody that's been out for a long time, a lot of this stuff wasn't around, and I can't speak to it because, you know, I have no personal experience with it. So it's great to hear from somebody that's actually going through it right now because it makes it real. So if you're in the military now, listening to this is more beneficial than me droning on about my checklist from 2005. I mean, I don't even know. It was on paper, people. It was on paper. I don't even know if they have paper anymore.
They still have those paper checklists.
Oh, it's good to see. See, that's tradition. That's called tradition, folks.
Keeping it real.
Keeping it real. But yeah, any last comments?
Jason, I'm really thankful for the opportunity to speak with you today and share a little bit about my story, and hopefully either through the Safe Talk stuff we talked about or through the SkillBridge stuff we talked about, hopefully it helps somebody out there. And if I can be of assistance to anybody, they can always reach out to me.
Excellent. Well, that's great, man. And again, I really do appreciate it. Now, you were security forces from 2002 to what, 2008 about?
Let's see. Went to basic in September of 02.
Okay.
Security Forces Academy. I completed that in February of 03.
Good old Lackland over at Medina.
So I was in Security Forces technically from February 03
okay.
to about February 09.
Okay.
I retrained and I graduated the basic public affairs specialist course at the Defense Information School at Fort Meade in February of 09, and I moved on from security forces after that.
All right.
So about 6 years.
About 6 years. So here's my question. Why do security forces, especially airmen, have this desire, this like burning need inside of them to mutilate steering wheels, dashboards, everything inside of a vehicle on a flight line somewhere? Is it just boredom? Is there something they teach you in the tech school? Because it's possible. I don't know what you guys do over there. I mean, I went to tech school with a bunch of guys from the Navy. They were CBs. They taught some weird shit. Is there something going on that I just don't understand?
Yeah, I think that was actually a course that we took at our tech school.
Good.
Yeah, it was How to Resolve Boredom 101. I think that was the class. You know, mutilating posts, steering wheels,
yeah.
You know, taking naps. No, I'm just kidding.
Yeah.
No, there's actually no course that's taught where defenders, as we affectionately call our security forces,
and
learn those skills.
Okay.
And unfortunately, those things are the byproduct of time, boredom, and not wanting probably to get out and do a foot patrol or walk around or conduct a building check. Or just they get sick and tired of looking at these OIs, operating instructions, and CDCs.
Because
they're so well written, right? They're exciting.
They are. That's exciting stuff.
Oh, I can't put it down. My gosh, I love those things. And so, unfortunately, some people, for whatever reason, they make that decision to alleviate that boredom and do those things. However, I would say to my defenders, my security forces folks, there is better things you can do with that time.
There are better things you can do. We listed a bunch of them just in this interview today. There's better things to do. Please stop doing it. Yes, to my mechanics out there, understand they're going through, you know, they're bored, you know, so they have a pocket knife, they're bored, things happen, you know. So, you know, have a little understanding on the mechanic side as well.
Indeed.
Well, James, thank you so much for coming on the show. I had a blast talking to you. Good luck with transitioning. I hope you land that perfect job for yourself. Good luck out in California with the SkillBridge internship that you're doing currently. And, best and brightest to you in the future.
Thanks, Jason. I've enjoyed speaking with you today. Have yourself a great one.
All right. You too, sir. I want to thank James for coming on the show. It was great talking to him all about the SkillBridge program, Safe Talk, all the things that he's got going on. If you're a transitioning military member, you have to take advantage of some of these programs that are out there. Listen, we all just want to run out the door. That's the way it usually is. You kind of see that light at the end. But trust me, when you get out, you're going to miss all the stuff that you were doing. So take advantage of your time in and set yourself up for success using some of these programs that are available, whether they are government programs through the DOD or one of the military branches, or if they're civilian programs that are targeting current active duty, guard, and reserve before they transition into civilian world. All right. So I'm telling you, there is a lot out there. There's a lot to look at, resumes. And, we've had people on the show with like Talents Ascend who can set you up with possibly a career before you get out. Now you talk about, what James was talking about with the SkillBridge program, where you can actually do an internship before you leave the military. This way you already kind of have some real life civilian work experience. And you can already start that networking process and making those contacts. Because like James said, he said he's applied to numerous positions. He hasn't had one land yet. It's, people are hiring, but it's a weird employment market right now. Companies are looking for very specific needs, and they're using their dollars for a specific task that they want. And if you can't translate your military service into what they need, you're going to be left to the wayside. So please take advantage of these programs that are out there. If you're still in, if you're just recently out, look at this stuff. There's so much out there. But again, thank you so much for James for coming on the show and just, sharing a little bit of his insight, over 20 years of service in the Air Force and then, going through that transition yourself. It was kind of cool to talk to somebody who's like right in the thick of it. Which is something we haven't really had just yet, because most of the people we talk to on the show are out of the military for years. But again, thank you. What else we got going on? So we're starting the new year off right with some good interviews like we usually try to do. But we didn't have too many shows at the end of last year because I was on vacation. All right. I traveled around. But something else that happened that was awesome for my family was we adopted a dog from Paws of War. Very spontaneous. We didn't even, we weren't really even looking for a dog. Zuma kind of found us. We saw her picture on Facebook. It was shared by Jenny and Stefan from Operation Vest. We saw her. We knew right away that she would make our family whole. And we wanted her in our home. We went through the whole process. They came and looked at the house. Paws of War is an amazing organization that is finding homes for these dogs that are rescued a lot of times from very bad conditions, and they need good homes. And they want to make sure that they're placed with the right people. So it wasn't like, hey, I just walked in and I walked out with Zuma. No. I went for multiple visits with her. My family went, even my daughter. We introduced my current dog, Gonzo, and made sure that they were, not aggressive towards each other. They came and checked out the house to make sure it was safe for Zuma. So trust me, they do their due diligence prior to placing an animal. And man, what a great organization. They made the whole thing a breeze. They sent her home with a care package. We did a very cool little event in Northport at the yacht club there, where they actually handed Zuma off to us during the Army-Navy game. Very, very cool. And she has been an amazing part of our family. Since then, we got to spend our first Christmas with her. My daughter has been ecstatic. She's sleeping up in the room with her. We are starting our training. Another thing that Paws of War does is, as part of the adoption, you the military member or the veteran goes for training with the dog. And I'm really looking forward to that. We're starting that here in just about a week. We've already gone for some one-on-ones, but we're actually going to start group training here, shortly. And I've always wanted to do that with a dog. I always wanted to try to go through the training. They call it the good citizen, I believe is the term for it, certification for the dog. And we're really looking forward to doing that. But a huge shout out to everybody over at Paws of War and everything they're doing. Huge shout out to Operation Vest for contacting or making that contact between us and Paws of War. So we have a little bulletproof pup running around, and she's doing awesome. She's happy, and she's my little sidekick, which I love. And waking up to her in the morning is definitely puts a smile on your face. So Gonzo's adjusting. He's an old man. He's 15 years old, so he's a little stuck in his ways. So he's kind of like, you got too much energy, kid. Go play in the corner. So, but he's doing fine as well. What else was going on? We finished out the new year with family. Like I said, we took a trip up to Canada. We did all of that. We came back down, had some great times, which is always important. We reached out to a lot of people to check on, friends and family who might not be with the people they want to be with. A lot of separation, and we made sure we reached out and talked to people on the phone and spent some time doing that. We did some FaceTimes and, all the Zoom calls, all that kind of stuff. So, which is always important. I hope everybody is doing that out there, checking on your buddies and friends and make sure that they aren't by themselves during these kind of tough times for a lot of people. The holidays is great and I love them, but they can also be a very difficult time for people. So hopefully we did good there. We have some upcoming stuff. We have the Operation Vest Polar Plunge, which is a 2.2-mile run, and then you jump in the water. I think it's down there on the South Shore. That's on January 21st. You can go over to their Instagram or Facebook to get the information. There's still plenty of time to sign up. Head down there and enjoy that with them. We're closing out at the end of this week our fundraiser for Hunter 7. Raising money for those cancer screening kits. We raised right around about $900. Listen, we didn't get to our goal. But that's fine. There's nothing wrong with that. I'm sure Hunter 7 will take the $900 and would have a smile on their face. They are always a grateful organization and doing great things. You should be following them on Instagram. They always post a lot of great information and thought-provoking information, stuff that you might want to take to your doctors, things you might want to look into. So please follow them on Instagram. We'll be sending the check over to them. Like I said, we're closing out the fundraiser at the end of this week, and all the money will go over to Hunter 7 to purchase those kits. So we basically got just a little over one kit, so we will have a veteran, because of the money that you all have donated, that will get screened for about 50 different cancers. Pretty cool stuff. I'm excited. So thank you again to everybody that donated. I know times are very tough for a lot of people right now. It was right around the holidays, which is even tighter for a lot of people, and you guys still showed up and donated. I can't thank you enough, and I know Hunter 7 can't thank you enough either, because you just make their mission a little bit easier with every dollar that you give. So thank you. Again, we'll post some final thoughts on that and all that on Instagram, showing the exact amounts that we're sending over so everybody can see what we're doing. I think that's it. As always, you can find us on Instagram, Facebook, Twitter, YouTube. Just search for us. We come right on up. You can go over to Amazon, pick up a shirt, a phone case, whatever. Check out some of the old designs, some of the new designs. It's a great way to support the show. Pays for my fees online and all that kind of stuff, and the Zoom and all the things that I got to do to keep this thing running. We got some interviews coming up in the next couple weeks, but we're also going to be a little choppy to start the year off because we're going to be doing construction on the studio. We're revamping the entire studio. We're ripping the whole thing out and redoing it. So it's going to be a little up and down as we take equipment down. And, I'm a one-man show. Me and Dad are going to be doing the construction, so it's not quick. We have to do it around work and all those types of things. But we're going to do our best to not be too interrupted and still get episodes out to you guys. We have a lot of people that want to come on the show, so I want to make sure that I get those interviews in. They might just be a little sporadic and a little off the normal schedule as I work around the construction that's going to be going on in the studio. But the end result is going to be amazing, and I can't wait for everybody to see it. Yeah, I think that's it. I think that's it for this week. You know, I hope everybody is starting 2023 off right, happy and healthy as you should be. Check on your buddies, check on your friends. If you need anything from us, always reach out. You can contact me at bulletproofveteran@gmail.com. You can head over to the website, bulletproofveteran.com, and fill out a contact form. You know, great way to ask questions or submit guest ideas or any of that stuff. I think that's it. All right. For this week and for Bulletproof Veteran Podcast, my name is Jason, and thank you.